Welcome to part two of our conversation with Jessica Angeli about turning the gift back on. Let me ask you, and you touched on it briefly, but like to talk about it in greater detail. Why was it that you decided to essentially revisit this ability that you had and basically turn it back on in recent years? You said it had something to do with your children, but what was that? What made you turn it back on?
So this is where it got a little scary for me again. I didn't see anything, but my son, who was 3 at the time, it was October of 2017, we had just moved into a new home, and he just started talking a lot more, because he has autism, and is on the autism spectrum, and so is my daughter, mm-hmm. and he didn't talk until he was almost 2.5, 3, but he would sign to me, sign language, but he didn't talk, so he was fine when we moved at first. And then he would not sleep in his room. And we knew that he had really bad sleep apnea, so we thought maybe he was having episodes that scared him. But then he started drawing crosses all over our home. Now, we're spiritual people. We're not really on the religious aspect. Like, we don't talk about crosses. We don't talk about Jesus. Some people will disagree with this, and that's fine. But that's just, I want my child to make his own decision. And I may expose him to that down the line, but I want him to make the choice to follow his own religion, and I'm very open to whatever religion he chooses. But anyways, he was drawing crosses all over our house, all over everything. There was like not, if he could draw on it, he drew on it, and it was definitely a cross. And I even asked his teacher, since he just started preschool, if they were on the letter X or something like that.
Sure.
And they said, no, we're still on the letter G, you know. That this was October, the beginning of the school year. So I was like, okay, well, this is weird. Finally, I just came out and I was like, Russell, what is going on? Why are you drawing this all over my house on everything? He goes, oh, it's to keep the monster away. And I go, okay, what monster are you talking about? Well, he comes in my room at night and he's really dark and he's like a shadow and he's got red eyes. And I said, okay, well, this is interesting information. And then my mom and dad had seen this medium lady, and he started having really bad dreams around the same time. And he was talking about the house catching fire. And I said, no, the house isn't going to catch fire. But this medium lady had said that, you know, he has the gift and he needs an adult to help him through it. Don't shut it off. Because, you know, like I said, a lot of times parents will, we're younger, we'll talk about Granny reading us a bedtime story. Well, Granny died 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do that to him. I didn't want to push him into this 3D reality that a lot of times our society lives in. And it's a duality. When your kid comes to you and says, okay, you know, Granny read me a bedtime story, there's only a couple questions you should be saying. And that's, how did she look? Did she talk about me? You know,
mm-hmm.
is she doing okay? What story did she read you? You know, actually talk about these things with your kids if you want them to be, you know, okay with themselves. And don't just shun them and say, oh, no, you were just dreaming. With him, he told me that there was a woman that told him about the crosses to keep the monsters away. And fast forward a week later, we're sitting at my computer going through my dad's Facebook page. I had to look for something for his business for him. So we're scrolling through the pictures looking for this flyer that he wanted me to share. And he's sitting on my lap, my son is, and he goes, hey, I know that lady. And I open up the picture and I expand it. And I go, oh, yeah? And it turned out to be my grandmother, my Catholic grandmother, that died when I was 10 years old. And I go, how do you know her? Oh, she comes to visit me at night sometimes. And she was in the living room, and she's the one that told me to draw the crosses to keep the monsters away. So I was kind of standing there with my mouth open. I know these things can happen, but you don't expect it to happen to your kid.
Sure.
You know? So that was kind of the point when the medium said he had the gift after this had all happened. I realized, okay, Mama Bear needs to come out, and she needs to get a handle on this to help them through this so that, you know, I wasn't like my mother. I said, oh, you know, you're just dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to help him through this and let him know that it's okay. So that's kind of what I've been doing for the last year, is helping him through it. And I turned it back on to get a handle on it again myself. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like looking through the world through new eyes as an adult.
Sure.
Because without my experience as a kid, you know, you tend to forget a lot of things. I remember a lot of things that happened, but you forget a lot. And then you see it through the child's eyes and you realize, oh, okay, yeah, I remember that. I remember experiencing that exact emotion,
mm-hmm.
you know, and him hearing voices. And a lot of times people will just jump to mental health issues
sure.
with their children. Schizophrenia doesn't start at age 3.
Yeah.
So
when you have been working at turning this back on, for you, mm-hmm. does it feel as strong as it did when you were a child? The sensitivity, the ability to see and experience these things, or has it tampered down essentially over the years, just as hearing and eyesight tamper down as we get older?
Yes, it's definitely tampered down. It's not as strong.
Okay.
I'm not seeing things right in front of me like I used to. A lot of times I'll see shadow figures, and I can tell you that the weirdest thing, my telltale sign when spirits coming to visit me or near me, is I'll get goosebumps from head to toe. And I know when they leave, because I'll get goosebumps from head to toe again. It's like my physical sign now. And then I'll start, you know, bringing myself into that state again, and then I can communicate. Whereas before, they just came. I'd had no choice. Now I kind of have that feeling, okay, there's something here. I need to turn it on. And then I will, and I'll switch over to my alpha state, and I'll calm myself down. But it takes me a minute, whereas before it was just automatically there.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to, like I said earlier with Timothy Shaw, he can take a deep breath. I have to kind of calm myself down a little bit and get into that mode and be like, okay, what do you need? How can I help you? And then communicate from there. Whereas before, they would just walk right up and I'd be able to see them, feel them, hear them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely tampered down over the years. And I'm hoping that my son will make the decision that I made and will keep it the whole time, so that he can help thousands and thousands of people throughout his life. But I will say I regret turning it off. If you can, I know a lot of people are scared if they have this gift and they're listening to me saying, yes, that's me. Or they have kids and they're scared for their kids. Do not push them. Do not push yourself to turn it off. Be happy that they have the ability to help people even after they've passed, or even help the living now, because there are people that would pay anything, or, you know, want to have that moment with their loved one or ask those questions. That are looking for people like you, you know, that need that closure.
And I want to talk about that in a moment. I want to talk about the role of someone who has this ability and their interaction between the living and the dead. But before we get there, I want to touch on something that you had mentioned earlier. As a mother, when you heard and you could narrow down that your son was interacting with a deceased loved one, that in a way, comforting, okay. But then you add in the other layer of, and they told me how to make these crosses to keep the monster away. That's got to be a little unsettling. That's going to be a little bit, okay, well, that's not, you know, Uncle Bill that's showing up here. This is, you know, this
exactly.
this is something else that's showing up here. What do you think he was experiencing? And it's an interesting thing, because if you're a child and you're experiencing this for the first time, Uncle Bill could be a monster if he was scary looking. And that's how it's being perceived. Not that he truly is a monster, but you're getting scared because you don't know what's going on. But in other cases, it was not a living person. What do you think it was that he was experiencing, that he was drawing these crosses to keep away?
Honestly, that my first paranormal investigation case with a team was my house.
Mm-hmm.
So when I joined the team, I had them come in, and I have another friend on our team that's a medium and has been her whole life. She's older now, and she's actually my mentor as an adult. And she said, this is not a loved one you're dealing with. And I was like, I know I have a loved one here that's trying to help him and trying to help me understand. But I know there's something else here that's not so friendly, because he literally was not sleeping and he was exhausted and it was literally stealing his life force. I'm not even kidding.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a team from Kentucky do some remote viewing. And for those that don't know what that is, it's basically where you're able to be in your own location and see other things outside of your location. It's another ability. And so they did that, and they came in, and I literally felt their presence in my home. And they said that they saw something called a wraith or a wisp, W-R-A-I-T-H. And if you've ever seen the movie Harry Potter, the Dementors in Harry Potter are modeled after the story of the race. And basically what they were and are non-human entities, as you had said, and they feed off of negative energy and feed off of people's life force. It's an old Scottish legend. It started with them. And from what I've done, basically, is they're the same thing as a religious demon, but not religious. So our crosses really wouldn't have done anything to keep the monsters away.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure my grandmother, she being Catholic, that's the first thing she jumped to with my son. And it helped him feel a little bit better, you know,
mm-hmm.
doing that, protecting his home and himself. So that's basically what I've done. I've done a lot of research over the last year on wraiths. And we actually had another case recently that in my neighborhood that we had to do that involved probably that same race. He can't get into our home, or can't get into our home now. And I know it sounds crazy to some people, but we were able to protect ourselves that way. But to this day, my son is still afraid of the window because he's seen that thing outside trying to get in.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely afraid of that.
When someone is thinking about something that is dark, or the demonic word that gets thrown around far too frequently,
yes.
is someone thinks about expelling it, they naturally go to the religious angle. They have an exorcism, religious relics are used and things of that nature to get rid of it. But if these things are not of a religious nature and they're not going to respond to religious relics, essentially it sounds like they are some sort of compacted entity that's just made up of negativity lurks. How do you expel such a thing?
So we pull things from different backgrounds just in case.
Mm-hmm.
We cover all our bases. So we have routines from Native American things, rituals like that, using certain herbs to cleanse the home. Everyone jumps to sage. Unfortunately, I have the worst allergy as a paranormal investigator, and I'm allergic to sage, so I can't use sage. It's the worst thing, let me tell you. Besides my allergy to caffeine, sage is the worst allergy to have as a paranormal investigator. So I use Palo Santo, which is Amazonian holy wood. I use cypress, juniper you can use. We pull things from all different angles in the alchemy area as far as different herbs and oils and things like that. And we just cover all our bases that way. Then we also use the different stones, which I guess could also come from a Native American outlook, or like a natural outlook, instead of using the holy relics. We use Apache tears, which is a type of stone, and we bury that on the four corners of our property. And that seems to have kept whatever we were dealing with, whether it was a wraith or a negative entity, out of our home. And I will do cleansings, like I said, with the Palo Santo, because I do, in the field that I work in, I have brought things home, unfortunately. And they weren't negative. They were just spirits I didn't want in my house. And so that is how we tend to do things. We've used, like I said, the stones. Selenite is another great cleanser. and it keeps negativity out of your home. And the different herbs, I have a whole rack full of herbs in jars that I use. And then I don't really have any crosses, like I said, in my house, except for the ones that my kid drew on our furniture, unfortunately. other than that, that's pretty much all I've used with this particular type of entity. You have to kind of figure out what you're dealing with before you can try and fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to use the D word.
Yeah.
Like you said, everyone's throwing it around. I feel like certain shows on TV, they see that, or certain movies. We found in our investigations that we deal more with Native American spirits that are negative than demonic spirits. So it's very interesting in this field that everyone likes to say, oh, I have a demon in my house, or I have a demon in me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you probably don't,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately. Well, actually, fortunately. I'm not going to say they don't exist. I do believe in, like I said, non-human entities that could be afflicted by religious relics, but I haven't come across any of them yet, thankfully.
Let me ask you this about spirits who don't know that they're dead, that you're able to pick up on and communicate with. Is it, I should say, what is the role of the living in someone with your abilities when it comes to communicating with them? Is it always to help them move on? Is it always to relay a message? Or are some completely content as to where they're at and they don't really want the living to intervene or interact on what their existence is today?
Actually, I have come across quite a few in the last year since working with my team that aren't content, except for the fact, well, excuse me, let me preface this. We had a case not too long ago, October, doesn't matter timing wise, but not too long ago, where there was a gentleman who had passed, and the client that was living there was having all kinds of issues, stuff getting thrown, things like that, and they thought it was something that was a D word. Luckily, it wasn't. There was a man there who was upset that he had died and didn't realize he was dead, and there were these people that were living in his house. You know, a lot of times when you have these, like, aggressive spirits that are throwing things around and moving stuff on you, and you worry about it being demonic, it's actually not demonic. It's just somebody that doesn't know that they're dead. And you're coming into their house. Imagine if somebody walked into your house. You'd be like, well, what the heck are you doing here? Why are you taking my stuff out? Why are you moving my chair? I want my chair to be there. Why are you moving it? And that was exactly the case with this particular case. He was really upset that the owners after he had passed at the house, had built a addition on his house where his garage used to be. And he was very angry about that. When I did the walk through the house, because I walked through separate from my team, I could smell where the garage used to be, and I could smell like motor oil and things like that. And I said, this used to be a garage, didn't it? And they said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, that's a huge thing for this gentleman that we're dealing with, because he's throwing all your stuff off the mantle because the mantle is not supposed to be there. It's supposed to still be his garage, and he's upset about this. He doesn't realize he's dead, and he wants to know why you destroyed his garage. And so then there was this chair that he had that was still in the house, and he literally wanted the chair to be there, and it wasn't. It was on the other side of the room, and we had an SLS camera that could back up what I was saying, that he kept standing in this corner of the window where this chair used to be. And then we did an EVP session, and the words, this chair, kept coming over and over and over again. So everything that I was telling them that he wanted was being backed up with our instruments and our tools that we were using in the investigation. So finally, I told them, he's not leaving. He's not going to leave. He doesn't want to cross over. He just wants his chair back where it used to be. Now, I told the client, I said, if he agrees to be nice and not throw your things around, will you put the chair back? And he actually said that he agreed through the EVP session that he would be nice if he got his chair back. So they did, and everything was fine. We contacted them. They haven't had any issues since moving that chair back to where he wanted it. So we've come across cases where literally all they want is for things to be like they used to be. And they're now they know they're dead, but they just want things to be like they were. And they're still going to stick around. They're not ready to cross over yet.
Mm-hmm. Does everyone need to cross over at some point? Does every spirit need to have another crossover point, or are they or is this their crossover? This is where the road ends for them, still roaming the same places that they once roamed, or does every spirit need to at some point take that next step?
For me personally, I believe in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that at some point, if you want to stay here and stick around, sure, fine, but that's your choice. If you want to be able to have happiness and be able to come back and have a new experience, then you're going to have to cross over into the spirit realm. And when I say the spirit realm, the way I explain it is we're here in 3D reality. 4D is kind of time or dream state, and then fifth dimension is spirit realm, and that's what some people would call heaven or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's where we go and we have all consciousness, from what I've experienced and what the spirits have told me. And the reason they call people like me mediums is because we're on both sides. We're in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
We have one foot in spirit and we have one foot in 3D. And we're in the middle, and that's why they call us medium. So for me, experiencing fifth dimension, it's a beautiful place where, you know, all the spirits can be, because time is a man-made construct. There is no time over there. And so if they cross over, they'll get to be able to experience all their lifetimes at once. And it's my true belief. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah. And one of the things I was going to ask, actually tied directly into time, was, is there ever a timetable? Is there a ticking clock when you're on the other side? And this is obviously purely an opinion-based question, but is there ever that ticking clock on the other side where eventually you do have to take that next step to whatever that may be? Or you will expire. Your energy will run out if you just choose to run the earth for so long and never take that next step.
I would say no. That energy can't be destroyed. It just changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they'll probably be stuck here if they choose to not take that next step. And their energy will forever roam this world, this dimension. Which is quite unfortunate, because like I said, from what I've experienced and what I've seen from fifth dimension, is what I call it,
mm-hmm.
my version of heaven, I guess, is you actually get, there's no time over there. So you actually get to see all of your lifetimes. Mm-hmm. If you believe in reincarnation, you get to see all the lessons that you've learned from all those lifetimes. And so that's a beautiful thing, you know, you're kind of, I don't want to say God in a way where you're all knowing, but you kind of are. You're able to see everything that you've experienced throughout the course of your existence since your energy was created. And so I think that's pretty awesome, you know? And it sucks if you didn't make the decision as an entity on this third dimensional plane to not cross over into fifth dimension, because you don't get to experience that. But I don't think that energy can be destroyed. In my opinion, it's just, it changes.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Jessica Angeli about turning the gift back on. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.